You're listening to Honestly Aging by Friends Life Care Vigor, a podcast where we explore what it's like getting older, the peaks, the valleys, and everything in between. In this season of Honestly Aging by Friends Life Care Vigor, we're covering topics related to solo aging. I'm your host, Cheryl Proska. Let's grow old together. On today's episode, I'm joined by Angela Dora Dobrinsky. Angela is a licensed professional counselor with a private practice. Additionally, she is a certified grief counseling specialist and holds a certificate in holistic health coaching from the Institute for Integrative Nutrition. Angela earned her master's degree in counseling psychology from Rosemont College and her bachelor's degree in psychology from Stockton University. Prior to private practice, Angela worked as a bereavement counselor for Mainline Health Home Care and Hospice, the Renfrew Center, and as adjunct faculty at Manor College teaching developmental psychology and stress and health psychology. Angela, welcome and thank you for being here. How are you today?
Hi, Cheryl. I'm doing well. It's so nice to be here with you. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Angela, you're joining me today to discuss grief and loss, especially as it relates to older adults and solo agers. We're going to cover some facets of grief and loss that I'll admit were new to me until we connected a few weeks ago. I'm grateful to work through this tough topic with you. So I'm wondering if you can start by sharing your background with grief and loss counseling.
Absolutely. So when I first started working exclusively in grief and loss was years ago. I was working, doing some counseling for a local nonprofit and loved that work and had an opportunity to apply for a bereavement counselor position with a local hospice. And when a colleague sent me the job posting, I'll admit I first said like, ooh, that sounds heavy. I don't know if I could do that. That sounds like really hard work. At the time though, I was working with a lot of folks coming out of abusive relationships. I was working with folks with acute mental illness. So, you know, in counseling, we work with hard things. So it was sort of a different type of hard. And I thought, well, let me see about this. So long story short, I started work as a bereavement counselor for a local hospice. And within weeks, Cheryl, I just absolutely loved it and felt like I was called to support people in a part of their lives that often found them alone and confused and maybe without a lot of support. People tend to, you know, like I did initially, people tend to sort of retreat from grief when people are in acute pain. And so very early on, I loved my work with grieving folks, and I stayed there for a couple of years until I went into private practice, where I work a lot with people who are grieving, but also with other mental health issues and supportive needs.
So it sounds like when you made that transition into bereavement, it clicked right away. Was there an aha moment for you or something where it just became like really clear that this, as you said, is your calling?
Yeah, you know what, this sort of aha was this reality or this understanding that grief is not something to be fixed. Like many other mental health struggles, it's, you know, mental, like many other emotional struggles, let's say, we sort of want to fix it. We want to right it. We want to prevent and manage anxiety. We want to recover from depression and so on. And recognizing very early on that grief is part of everyone's experience, completely natural, normal, unavoidable, although it can look very different for everyone. And that my role as a grief counselor is to really be with someone in that pain, in that conflict. Sometimes it's not just pain, grief. Sometimes there's a lot of conflicting emotions, including things like relief or hope or joy. And that's unexpected to people and can be distressing even. But to recognize that in this capacity as a grief counselor, my role is to really be with people in it, to normalize it, to facilitate a healthy grief process, but not to try to fix it for them. And for me, that's what was the great bit. I can be in this pain with you and help you in the ways that I can as a fellow human.
And so often we associate grief when someone who we love or who we're close to dies. But can you talk about how there's also that grieving someone who's still living?
Absolutely. This was another illuminating thing for me when I started working in bereavement counseling. I started to see grief everywhere and not just after death. And so recognizing, even in my own, in myself and in other clients, things that we grieve that aren't deaths. So a really common one right now is people grieving the loss of a loved one in addiction. So the person's still alive, but they're not here anymore, or they're not themselves, or the loss of a family member through cutoff. Like, my adult daughter doesn't talk to me anymore. We had a fight, or I don't know what I did, whatever it might be. My daughter's not in my life anymore, even though she's still alive. And that's losing people, not to death. But then there's so many other things, not people, that we grieve. And so we can grieve the end of a marriage, even if we chose to end it. Grieving the end of a job or a career or a work phase. Grieving the loss of mobility or health, right? Like, I no longer can use my right hand, and grieving that. So seeing how people can grieve even when there's not a death to point at has been really illuminating for me, and now informs really my work with all my clients, regardless of what they're coming to me for. I see all these losses throughout our lifespan and what it means to really recognize them and their impact on us. And I think many of those things don't tend to be recognized by others, sort of in the world in general. I sort of say, you know, people will likely bring you a casserole if your child dies. People don't often bring you a casserole when your child's out there suffering from addiction and no longer in your world, but alive. So there can be a lack of sort of public showing of support for those losses.
And a few things that you talked about stood out to me, because I found that I was able to relate to them. And I'm thinking about, like, leaving a job. I knew it was the right decision to leave. However, it was really challenging, because I was also leaving behind people who I cared about. And looking back, just from when I was going through the end of high school and the end of college and losing some of those friendships, that, like, that is a loss. And I'm trying to think, if someone comes to you and says, I'm going through these experiences, I'm feeling grief and loss, how do you go about starting to help someone work through that emotional load that they're carrying?
Yeah, I mean, first, people rarely come and say that unless it's a death. So I think people often don't even recognize it as such. And I think the naming of it in a therapeutic setting alone can be helpful, validating, normalizing. Mm-hmm. You just mentioned, like, high school and college, and it occurred to me just to mention, like, how many college freshmen suffer from depression and adjustment issues. And I think there's a lot of grief in that too. What they knew, their old world, their old routine, their old friends. I can go down the street and see my friend. Now everyone's spread out across the country because we're in college in different places. Things like that, that's grief. No college freshman is coming to me saying, I'm grieving the loss of my high school experience. They don't recognize it as such in the moment, but when I see these things and we can share those together and talk with people about, you know, you mentioned specifically a job. That's such a big one, Cheryl. We tend to so identify with our work, first of all, and sometimes identify with a title or maybe our productivity, or, but then there's those other compound losses. When we say leave a job under any circumstance, again, even if you're choosing to, of losing a routine, could be losing income or benefits, could be losing the daily interactions with certain people who know us in a certain context and bring a certain level of fulfillment to our life that I think often we don't recognize in our daily life. It's just part of our life. Hi, Jane, how are you today? And then we don't have that anymore. You feel that loss. So I think the first thing is really naming that, identifying it, recognizing it, honoring it, and not trying to minimize it. And so in many cases, those losses come because of a gain, right? So maybe you leave a job to retire. Mm-hmm. Everyone's looking forward to retirement, right? And you're going, but why am I so depressed? Why is this so upsetting to me? I thought retirement was supposed to be this happy phase of my life. And it can be, and it can be while you also recognize the losses inherent in retirement. So it's not either or, and it's not saying, well, it's sad you lost that, but let's just look forward to retirement. Nor is it saying, well, retirement is great, so it doesn't matter that you lost that. It's both. It's saying, wow, retirement's not quite what I expected because I really miss saying hi to Jane every Monday and our, you know, I don't know, Friday football pool or whatever it might have been that became part of my life, my routine, and that's not there anymore. That's gone. So I think honoring that, recognizing what's gone, of course, also focusing on what is here, the people that are in your life now, the opportunities in your life, the things that perhaps were added or took over when something else was removed or taken away or left behind. But it's finding that balance of saying it's sort of, it's both. Like it can be a beautiful thing and there can be pain in it, even when it's something that we want to be doing like retirement.
And I'm so glad you brought up retirement, because what we experience at my organization is people can tend to build up retirement as this great big accomplishment. And you spend a couple weeks relaxing, you take that big trip, and then there's this sense of, where's my purpose? My purpose was going to work. My purpose was being productive. Exactly. Now what? And you may start experiencing some of those losses you talked about before, where maybe you are losing some of your loss of mobility. Maybe you are losing some of your independence, and then it's compound, like you were mentioning before. So retirement is such a point that I find it very important to acknowledge it and work through it and try to figure out how and where you might find that purpose again.
Right. And looking for opportunities. I think let's talk about compound losses a little bit specifically around like retirement and retirement age, because this is something that also, I guess, surprised me or was new to me when I started working in bereavement. How many of my sweet clients came to me having lost a spouse within a year after they retired? We've been working our whole life, living our whole married life, looking forward to this. We were getting the beach house, or we were planning the travels, or we built our dream home, and they're gone. It's not uncommon. It's an unfortunate correlation age-wise. At retirement age, we might lose more people in our lives, not necessarily spouses, but the older we get, the more people we lose, sadly. But mobility, other facets of our identity, not related to work, but maybe related to being in the work world, maybe losing, you know, having adult children. And so losing our kids, sort of the empty nest sort of part of life, and all those losses that tend to add up and sometimes hasten around retirement age or just post-retirement. And so, again, I think we have to acknowledge those. We don't want to scare people to death and say, well, here's all the things that you might lose in your 60s or something, not that, but here's the reality of life. As this stuff happens, these things happen or some things might go away. And then focusing really on the opportunities. Mm-hmm. So what is it now at this phase of life that you can have, do, or be that you couldn't before? And I think for solo agers, that's a whole other level. And without other solo agers in your world or network, it can be hard to identify some of these things. Mm-hmm. But I think there are a lot of opportunities for people, including solo agers, to see, okay, I don't have this anymore, or perhaps I never did have this, but here's what I can do, have, or be because of that. So the first thing that comes to mind as I work with some of my clients, some of my older clients who are solo agers, they have the ability to, for instance, prioritize their own budget. They don't share a budget with someone else. Now that means they have one income or, you know, don't have the benefit of an additional income, but within their financial planning, they are considering only their own needs and priorities when they're working on their budget and deciding what they're going to spend on and how. So if they think it's important that they winter in Florida and they have the means to do it, they can do that and they don't need someone else's approval. They're not held back by someone else's medical needs. They're not held back by perhaps in-laws or extended family that prevent them from making a decision like that. Or if they want to prioritize spending so that they are spending more freely on self-care, on therapeutic interventions, on counseling, on acupuncture, on a retreat, that they can do that. That's their, independent decision. So that's just one little example of like an opportunity that a solo ager might have in creating their, this phase of their life that someone who is, for instance, attached might not have that same ability.
Would you prefer to age independently in your own home or live in a nursing facility? I know what I'd rather do. Friends Life Care membership offers just that. Plan today for a future lived at home with vitality, independence, growth, and resilience while protecting your savings. Learn about your options at a free seminar or webinar. Register at friendslifecare.org/register or call 215-628-8964. A word that came up for me when you were describing all of that was autonomy.
Yep.
They can be very autonomous in their decision making, and that can really be to someone's benefit.
Absolutely. And so even if you're on a very tight budget and you are deciding whether you want to spend your grocery money on rice and beans or on boiled chicken, you're deciding. It's not someone else saying, well, I don't eat rice or beans, so we're eating chicken every day for the rest of our lives. So it's a silly example, but just to say the autonomy in that, in the lives of solo agers can be a huge opportunity that some folks who are really beholden to another or really maybe limited by the needs of a partner or someone they're caregiving to, something like that, don't have any of that autonomy. So that's one example of just looking for some opportunities in this phase to offset some of the loss and to create new meaning and new purpose.
So switching gears a little bit, sometimes we lose someone who we love, but maybe the relationship we had with that person was complicated. Or the cause of the death was taboo, like a suicide. How might that change the grief process?
I'm so glad you asked, because this is really common and really sort of taboo, quiet. People come to me like, I have to share this with you because no one else gets it. My ex-spouse died. he was at, I'm giving an example. This is mm-hmm. not true for me, but someone may come to me and say, you know, my ex-spouse died. I divorced him 30 years ago because he had a drinking problem and it was never going to work between us. And he died and I am bereft and devastated. I loved him. He was my husband. He was important to me. Nobody gets it. They say you were divorced. They say he was, you know, trouble for you or what have you. And no one's showing up for this. Or my child died of a drug overdose and they had been struggling for years. And people are saying, you probably feel at peace because he's at peace now. And I don't feel at peace because my child died. Or trying to think of another comment. You know, this is less common, but sometimes it's a relationship that wasn't accepted by others. So I've worked with folks who maybe were in an extramarital affair one way or the other, and that partner died and that no one's showing up for them. You know, like this was an extramarital affair, or perhaps there's something about the relationship that is outside the values of their family or their friends. And so people are saying, like, we're not acknowledging that because we don't approve of that sort of relationship. This is so hard because I think the first, it can be a little confusing even for the person grieving that loss, you know, like, why am I grieving my ex-husband? So sometimes people struggle with that a bit. I think it really limits the support that shows up for them. And I think it can feel infinitely more lonely than some of the losses that are more readily acknowledged by others. So for people in a position like that, first, I just want to say it is not like talked about. We don't hear a lot about this sort of grief in the public sphere, but it's completely common and completely normal and not something you should be alone in. And so I think if you have a trusted counselor or clergy person or mentor or a close friend that you know you can confide in, do. If you don't, it's worth, I think, looking at the people in your life and seeing who is most trustworthy, who is safest, sort of with your heart, and sharing really explicitly with them what this means to you. Like, look, I know it seems confusing that I'm so heartbroken that my ex-spouse died, but I'm heartbroken that they died. And I really want to be able to share that with someone and talk with someone about that. It might take a little more explicit sharing and directive seeking of support from someone. Like, I think you think I don't need help, but I really do. And here's what I'd like you to know about what I'm going through, or here's what might be helpful for me, or here's what I'd like to be able to share more readily. So it's tough because it puts the onus on the grieving person to sort of ask for support because others aren't readily offering it. That said, to anyone listening, you know, think through your own network and who might be suffering something like that right now, who might have experienced a loss that perhaps you or others didn't really recognize as significant. And if you pause and think, you know what, wow, like this person's ex-father-in-law died and I didn't think about it, but that was a special person to them, even if, you know, they were no longer married to their child or what have you. So maybe think about that and reach out. Like, hey, it didn't occur to me that this might have been really rough for you. How are you doing? Worst case scenario is someone says, I'm fine. You know, so there's nothing wrong with extending that, but I think that's really important to think about, Cheryl, for the people who are themselves grieving, but also as we think about the people in our world who might benefit from our support. It doesn't always look as clear cut as, wow, they were happily married for 50 years and now their spouse died, so of course I'm going to reach out. It's not always that clear cut, these losses.
So you started to share some ideas for resources where individuals who are experiencing all different types of grief and loss. Could you mention any more or any different types of resources to help our listeners?
Yeah, absolutely. And so it depends on personality and means and so on and so forth and just interest. But there's a few that I think bear mentioning. One, I love the website called whatsyourgrief.com, spelled just whatsyourgrief.com. And I think Cheryl will share that information. it is a wealth of resources, articles, even just sort of quotes, sometimes programs for people who are grieving all different types of losses and at all different stage of life. And it's it's an active website with new content all the time. And I think there's sort of something for everyone on there. So that's one I recommend a lot. I love the book called Healing After Loss. I was just looking to see if I have it. I do have it right here, but it's out of arm's reach. Healing After Loss by Martha W. Hickman. This is a daily reader. So you open to say January 11th, and there's a little quote and a passage and a little reflection. It's sort of just enough, even for someone who's in the throes of grief, to give you a little orientation, a little perspective in your day. And you can just pop in any day you want. You don't have to read a whole book. I wrote a book myself called Unmoored, A Guide for Grieving People. It's a brief guide to some of the experiences of grief and some suggestions for support and comfort with journal prompts and things like that. It's a little 60-page book. And then if you are so inclined, I really recommend people consider support groups. Many people think it's not for them. Of course, it's not for everyone, but I think it's worth exploring. And so you can find grief support groups at many churches or places of worship. Go to your the bulletins or the websites and see what they're running right now. Many local hospices also offer bereavement support groups to the public and at no charge. I have compiled a list of a few locally that are currently running or run periodically. Cheryl will share those so that people don't have to go on a wild goose chase, but those hospice support groups, and some are in person and some are virtual. So there's options for people depending on your preference and accessibility and so on. In my experience, when I was working as a bereavement counselor at the hospice, the support groups is where most of my clients who I think liked and appreciated our individual work together, but the support group is really where the bulk of that healing happened, being with other people who get it. And I think there's something just invaluable in that. If you're open to it, try one. If that doesn't quite feel like a fit, be willing to experiment with another, because it's all different people, different leaders, different styles, different formats. But I think those are some really useful resources for people who are experiencing grief to look into, for sure.
And it sounds as if you would be able to build a community.
Correct.
And especially if you are feeling that grief and loss and maybe some loneliness, having a community to support one another could really be generated from a support group.
Absolutely. And again, even though the losses can be different, the impact of grief can be different. People just sort of get it and get that. When stopped at my former position, about a year after I left there, I heard from a former client who was also in a support group, and she and another support group member had just had lunch together. I had lunch with this person and we were thinking about you a year later. And so that created this really enduring friendship and connection. Both had lost a spouse and both at that point were dating again. So even beyond their acute grief, they developed this friendship and community that lasted. So we see that a lot in those sort of support groups. And that's why I really encourage people to check them out if you're all open to that. And it's not always as sort of woo-woo touchy-feely as
right.
I think, if you're used to seeing a support group on a movie or something, consider an open mind and check it out for yourself. They're a little different than that.
So Angela, in closing, I just want to ask or give you the opportunity, is there anything else that maybe we didn't cover or any closing words that you would like to leave us with today?
Oh, so much we didn't cover. How could we possibly do it all? But I think basically this is something that grief and loss is something that I think no one should go through alone. And so if you have a friend, if you have, again, a counselor, a clergy person, even a physician, whoever it is in your life that you know and trust to share your current experience with, I really encourage you to share that, even if it's just a one-time, oof, here's what I'm going through and I want someone to know. I think the unburdening of that and the connecting with another person can be a lifesaver. there's no reason to be going through all of this alone. And you might, you know, connect with someone who gets it enough to be able to be there for you and with you and just be, you know, a companion in your grief. And I think that's valuable. And I just don't want to see anyone going through it alone. So I just encourage people to reach out to whomever you feel most comfortable doing so.
Well, Angela, thank you so much for sharing your knowledge and guiding us through a myriad of grief and loss that our listeners may experience. I hope this conversation helps people understand that they, as you said, are not alone, and it's okay and important to ask for support when they need it.
Thank you so much, Cheryl. I'm glad to have been here.
Thank you for listening to Honestly Aging by Vigor Health. You can find links and show notes from this episode on our website at friendslifecare.org/podcast. Thank you to Angela Dora Dobrinsky for joining us today. You can learn more about Angela on LinkedIn and her website, angeladora.org. Links to both, as well as the other resources Angela mentioned during the podcast, can be found in the show notes. If you like our show, please rate, review, subscribe, and join us next time. To learn more about aging with vitality, independence, growth, and resilience, subscribe to our blog at friendslifecare.org/blog.